Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
SecondCityHockey.com.
Jonathan Toews.
Commit to us. Commit to the jersey. Commit to our people here.
Welcome into another episode of Musings on Madison here on the Second City Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Dave Melton, the site manager for Second City Hockey, and I'm coming to you on the precipice of what is probably going to, well, hopefully will be a very quiet month of hockey things, maybe month and a half before training camp opens up. But we've got the usual crew assembled this evening. Want to do one more quick episode, kind of tie up all the loose ends from free agency madness from the last week to 2 weeks, and put a bow on all that, and then look ahead to a summer where probably not much is going to happen. So before I get too far away from all that, I want to bring in the usual cast of characters who are all with me this evening. First off, it is the analytics darling of Second City Hockey, Shepherd Price.
Hi, the hockey world's about to be as dead as I feel at 10 o'clock p.m. I'm 26 years old and I feel dead at 10 o'clock p.m. Can we, what is happening?
I don't know what's happening, Shepherd. I mean,
he's Chandler Bing.
I get up at 6:30 and I'm an adult and I don't like this.
You're like,
make it stop.
You're in the media world. Like, you're supposed to be a night owl.
I know. Except I have a day job in media.
Yeah. Well, how do you watch Vegas then? They play on the West, not that, Pacific time zone, right? But still,
that is a hurdle a lot of games. I will say, yes. Yeah. That's a hurdle I will face when I come to it.
All right. Well, good luck with that. I guess when any teams go to the West Coast, we'll make sure you don't recap them, okay?
I will be asleep by the second period.
Old man Shepherd. You know, that makes me feel, because I, as I'm significantly older than you, I'm understanding more and more. It's really just a mindset thing. Like, Shepherd, I was out till 4 a.m. Friday night. Come on, dude.
Yeah, you're so lucky you got to that Jimmy World set.
Yeah, oh, it was wonderful.
Jealous.
Yeah.
Jealous. I'm not going out anytime soon because, again, St. Louis, mask mandate.
Yeah, well, you can still wear a mask and go outside. Well, anyway, let's bring in the rest of the crew before we get too far away. You just heard his voice a little bit. He is the Second City Hockey. What Dexter Holland is to the Offspring, it is Milosavic.
Pretty fly for a white guy, also. I have no opening monologue. Boycott the Ricketts.
I co-sign all of that. And then also with us this evening, she is Second City Hockey's Boolean Wall of Text. It is Betsy.
If I'm not as like super excited this week during the podcast, and AKA that means I won't be as verbose. It's because I'm getting over a tummy issue and I need more sleep. I'm so like,
we're going to call that an upper body injury. She was a game time decision pretty much every day this week. We hope she's going to play through it, but we might have to send her to the room before the third period's over.
It's true.
What if sick LBR pronounces all the Russian names not like right off the bat correctly? It's like LBR in reverse.
I'm usually okay with Russian names. It's like names you wouldn't think I would have trouble with that I'm just like, why am I trying this?
I just use that as I don't know. They're all Russian to me.
Swedish. I have trouble with Swedish names a lot. French. Can't pronounce French anything.
Fair enough.
Put a lay in front of it. That's all. That's French.
No.
Lay grill.
As a French speaker, no.
Oui, oui.
What the hell is lay grill?
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh, sorry. That's the mood I'm in right now.
Well, I mean, we're gathered, like, as I said earlier, like, there's not really too much to talk about, and hockey's pretty much going to be done for the next 2 months. Bob McKenzie's drinking Thank margaritas God. Somewhere in the middle of nowhere. So it's going to get sideways in a hurry tonight, folks. So hope you're all ready for it. Also, I forgot to everyone mention Twitter handles, because Mill is at Mill182, Shepherd is at Shepherd Price, and I think I'm back on Twitter finally. I think I've found my way around the Twitter banning algorithm again. So it's at @SCH_DaveM. If anybody wants more mediocrity on their timeline, that's where you can find me now. And starting in about 3 weeks here, I hope you like high school football tweets, because you're going to get a lot of them.
Go Dogs.
New coach this year, Mel. But big things going for your guys.
I don't pay attention.
So Mel, and actually I wanted to ask the panel about this, and this is the reason I referenced The Offspring when I introduced you to the panel, but has anybody else watched the Woodstock documentary yet?
I really want to watch the Metallica. We'll see what they say about the Metallica set and the Limp Bizkit set, because they're crazy.
The Metallica set gets very little play because everything had already gone haywire by that point. The Limp Bizkit set gets a lot of publicity because I guess they pretty much tried to pin the whole thing on Fred Durst.
Yeah.
Which is entirely wrong. But
dude, also, the Kid Rock set like ruined everything.
Kid Rock started it. I think it was the bassist for Limp Bizkit walked out with middle fingers in the air, which was indicative of the mood of the entire. I had no idea how crazy everything got on Sunday. It just turned into a mass, basically mass chaos. Like everything got looted. They were breaking into ATMs. The one guy said, "I didn't drink any water until Sunday night because we stole it all," or something like that.
That Metallica set is amazing, though.
But that's all I got. So
yeah, I'll have to watch that soon. That's a good call. Offspring set's good. The Metallica set's amazing.
Shepherd and Betsy, you guys were alive in '99, right?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Just making sure. As we start talking about this, I'm like, I think I might have just aged myself a little bit, because I vaguely remember it happening. And I don't remember that it was quite the shit show that it turned out to be. So, so for all the kids out there, if you need some entertainment on a random summer night here, watch that documentary. It's really good.
Woodstock was like the first ever thing to get canceled. They're like, we're legitimately never doing this again.
That was probably a good idea. Like they tried to make a tribute to something that was 30 years ago, like at a completely different time, place, and cultural position. So, yeah. It's good though. Highly recommend. 10 out of 10. So you guys want to talk about some hockey? I mean, we don't have too much to talk about, but I guess we could try, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, always try. Before Shepherd and I hijack this and turn it into a pro wrestling podcast, we should get the hockey in.
Well, yeah, I've said that we've got about 10 minutes before that happens. We'll see. But the main thing we wanted to do tonight is kind of go player by player with some of the big names that the Blackhawks added in the last couple of weeks here. We talked a lot about the draft picks last week. I want to kind of go retroactively and talk about the new guys, because I think, well, now that we know they're all going to be here, I think much of the success or failures of the next season is going to hinge on how a few of these guys do, especially the player that we're going to start with tonight, which is goaltender Marc-Andre Fleury, who did confirm on Sunday via video from a private jet tarmac somewhere that he is going to play for the Blackhawks this season, because the reports were that he was contemplating retirement, which is understandable. But he's going to be in Chicago. He's automatically the number one goalie. He won the Vezina Trophy last year. But we wanted to just kind of dive into a little bit more in depth about him. And Shepard wrote a piece that hit at our website, I believe, on Monday or Tuesday. Monday? It was Monday. Sorry, guys. Days of the week are all blurring together again. It's just like last April and May and June, all those days. But anyway, it got a little bit more in depth. So, Shepard, I was going to go to you first and just kind of, if you want to summarize that and add any other points about things that the average Blackhawks fan may not know about Marc-Andre Fleury when they see him on the ice this year.
Yeah. So, his last season was really good, like a 928 save percentage, well above goal saved above expected, and good GAR, one of the best goaltenders in the league. The year before that, it was shaky. Not great. 905 save percentage. There's a reason the Golden Knights traded for Robin Lehner at the deadline, used him in the playoffs, and then signed him to a five-year extension.
I want to pause you right there because one of our commenters pointed out something. Actually, I think this was somebody who came over from Knights on Ice and shared this with us, and this is something that I did not know about. But apparently in November 2019, so during that season that you just talked about, Shepard, Marc-Andre Fleury's father passed away to lung cancer. And
yeah,
by all reports, he and his father were very close. So that's where there may have been some sort of connection between those two.
There may have been, for sure. Like, I don't think he was in the right proper headspace that season.
Mm-hmm.
And then COVID started hitting in February and... Well, in March, it got here well before March.
Got real in March. Let's
yeah. Like that. Yes. So like that throws everybody into a different headspace. So there might have been things about that, but again, he's 37 years old, almost 38. We're kind of in the same age range as we were expecting to be with Duncan Keith before he got traded.
He'll be 37 in November.
Yeah.
I don't want to age him that. He's not young.
No, he's Brent. Isn't he like Brent Seabrook's age? Wasn't he drafted in the same class as Brent
Seabrook? He was drafted
Brent
Seabrook. Yes, he was.
Yeah. So that kind of paints a picture of how old Marc-Andre Fleury is, which is why that 905 season might also be a little bit worrying. This Vezina season, again, the first in his career, the first time he's been a finalist. For the Vezina, which is a GM voted award. And you'd think like some of the Pittsburgh GMs would have some pulling power. I wouldn't expect him to hit that mark again, but a career average season for him is like 915, and I'll take that.
Yeah, even if he comes down from the ceiling of a Vezina Trophy winner, it's still a pretty damn good goalie.
Yes, especially behind, again, and they didn't fix it that much. Arguably the worst defensive system in the league. He was in Vegas where he had inarguably way better defensemen. Shea Theodore, Alec Martinez, Alex Pietrangelo, Nate Schmidt for years. Braden McNabb is probably around the same level as Connor Murphy. Lower, I'd say, but around the same level. They do the same job. And that's their top four. And they're all largely better than any of the Blackhawks. Yeah,
Vegas has better defense.
Yes. Yes. So that's a concern I have with Marc-Andre Fleury coming to Chicago. The other thing is he is not Corey Crawford. Keep that in mind. He does not have the same positioning and knowledge of angles and like just... Again, you never saw Corey Crawford make that many flashy saves because he didn't have to. A lot of pucks on purpose hit him center mass, and he just like stopped it. Marc-Andre Fleury is going to make a lot of flashy saves, and it's going to be fun. But like he's making those flashy saves because he's often, and certainly a lot more often, caught out of position than Corey Crawford is. Like that's the thing to remember about athletic goaltenders like him and Jonathan Quick, is that those guys get kind of caught out of position sometimes because they don't have the same knowledge of angles.
I feel like Dilly and Subban both kind of have that mold where they more of an athletic style. And the problem with those two is they would get caught swimming like way out of their crease. Fleury is at least within the ballpark of able to come back and make this save. And that's something that I guess you have to learn over time at the NHL level. Maybe Dealey and Subban haven't figured that out, and maybe they won't ever figure it out. But clearly Fleury has figured it out somewhat because he just won the Vezina Trophy. So
yes. And he's also a very, just a forewarning, he's a very aggressive stick handler. Like, he will get out of his crease.
Oh, I don't know, game three in a conference final series? Is that when he gets aggressive?
Yeah.
Okay.
Poor Flower.
Betsy Mill, anything else to add on Marc-Andre Fleury? I know Shepard took most of the talking points there, but...
Somebody once mentioned that Flower kind of... his seasons go in, like, threes. Like, so it's, like, a kind of bad... Like, not bad, like... bad, terrible, but you know, like 905, 906, 909. And then he does an average season and then he does a really good season. So if he's in that rotation, we're hopefully getting an average season next year at the very least. So.
I think an average Marc-Andre Fleury season is probably better than a average, like Colin Dealey season or Kevin.
Yeah, Martin. And I'll go ahead and say, so one of the reasons I wanted them to keep Corey Crawford, I wanted him to sign for 2 years because I wanted somebody to like mentor Lankinen and help with that. And I think Marc-Andre Fleury could definitely help in that regard. I think it's why they signed Cam Ward back in the day, even though he was terrible. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a whole thing about that. The only issue is, of course, that we might run into is that Colleton ended up riding Lankinen maybe a little too much last year because he was doing so well for so long and he didn't get as much rest. I don't want him to do the same thing to Fleury where he rides him and then tires him out, because I think that might have been part of his issue towards the end in the playoffs with Vegas. You know, it was just a lot towards the end. So,
right. And he's also old. Compacted sure. Schedule, pandemic, all that, all those.
Yeah, exactly. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. I hope it's closer to how like Corey Crawford and, oh my God, how am I blanking on the goaltender?
Robin Leonard?
No, his backup in 2013.
Ray Emery.
Antti Raanta. Yes.
No.
That point, Ray Emery.
Yeah, Emery. So they split much more evenly, which is why they both got the Jennings. You know, a lot of times the Jennings only goes to one goaltender because it's like a certain limit they have to hit.
Right.
So they both got it because they split it so evenly. I would like it to be closer to that. Obviously, Fleury gets more, but make sure that Lankinen gets his playing time and maybe a little bit more than a normal backup does. And I think that would be a really good tandem. For the season.
I feel like the most ideal scenario with this goaltending arrangement, assuming it's Fleury 1 and Lankinen 2, which I think we're all kind of just assuming at this point. I think the most ideal scenario is that they both play very well, but then maybe second half of the season, Kevin Lankinen goes on a heater and actually wrestles the number one job away from Fleury and takes it for the rest of the season. And then Fleury leaves in free agency or retires or whatever. And then Lincoln is your number one guy next season. Like, that would be the ideal, right?
That'd be awesome, but I'm fine with... So, I know everybody is like, the moves that they made seem like very, like, we want to try to hit it this season. I am not that optimistic, and so...
No.
If obviously, we're not all that optimistic. So, Flower being here, and he goes the whole way, and this is more of a, like, learning to pace yourself, getting better up to speed and not having to shoulder it all for Lankinen, I'm fine with that too. If he comes out the number one at the end of the season, awesome. If he's still the backup at the end of the season, but you can definitively go, you know, like he's a Soros to Rene, then I think you've won something there too, to me.
Yeah. Mill, anything else to add?
I agree with Betsy, like, and I think this is something we talked about on a bunch of podcasts early last season, that we were kind of unsure about the goalies. So it's definitely nice, be it Crawford or Marc-Andre Fleury, to have a future Hall of Fame caliber goalie to learn from for a guy like Kevin Lankinen.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I'm a Fleury fan. I actually have a Fleury jersey, but it screams that the organization has no idea what they're doing, because they could have just given that kind of money to Corey Crawford. Like, he went to New Jersey for that before he decided to retire.
Yeah, I mean, they could have given it to him a year ago, I guess. Well, I guess maybe they changed their plans in terms of long-term approaches. Like, I don't know. I don't want to defend it because I don't think you're wrong, Mill, but...
Well, I just am saying in that regard that I don't think that they have any long-term future plan. Like, we're all saying, oh, this could happen or this. It's like, I don't even know what they're thinking. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, their booking is not nearly as good as AEW's.
Correct. Join Dark Order. But
join Dark Order. Let's go.
But I'll just say that in the immediate future, I think I'm amongst... I can speak for all of us where we all enjoy Marc-Andre Fleury as a player and seemingly a person from what we know. And we're happy to have him and to watch him. He's a great athlete and hopefully he'll be good for the team.
Yeah, I was going to actually get to that point, Mills. Again, these are pro athletes. We don't know them. I've never met them. I've never hung out with them. So you don't really know them. But as much as Marc-Andre Fleury has been around for at least 15 years now, and he's by and large seemed like an enjoyable person, and he seems like he genuinely enjoys playing hockey, and he's an easy person to cheer for. And the fact that he's in Chicago, I thought that was pretty cool. Like, I remember on one of the Road to the Winter Classic behind the scenes or 24/7, whichever one the Penguins were on, I watched every episode and came away from it really liking Marc-Andre Fleury. So the fact that he's in Chicago, I guess it's fun to have a guy that you can cheer for.
Yeah. And you know, because I have such a strong Pittsburgh connection with friends and family there, they all still love him. I went to Hawks Pens in November of 19. So it was like a long time ago, but recent enough because of COVID. And I like to go to a game. And that building was, even with having Crosby and all these guys, they still plenty of 29 shirts in that building. So that's, you know, something we can be happy about.
Yeah, I had a friend from college. He's from the Pittsburgh area, and I texted him as soon as it was made official. And like the first thing he said is, "I'd love to have him back. He's about as enjoyable as you can get with a pro athlete." So that doesn't suck, especially given all the other stuff going on with the Hawks these days. We'll take that.
Yeah, again, in like a cult of personality or a dearth on it in the NHL, in a dearth of the NHL. Fleury's got a lot of personality, and it's a really good one.
Yeah. So I hope he plays as well as he did last season in the upcoming season in Chicago. That's about
he's got his work cut out for him.
He does. It's that's always the caveat you have to issue with any Blackhawks goaltending discussion is God knows what they're going to be getting in front of him. And that is actually the perfect segue for the next player we wanted to talk about. Just Jake McCabe from the Buffalo Sabres, who the more and more I read about him, the more and more it seems like the Hawks got a sneaky good pickup. Like, I don't want to put him in the Johnny Oduya category, but when the Hawks made that trade, I felt like it was kind of a shrug of the shoulders, and he and Hjalmarsson got put together and they were awesome for the next 3 to 4 years. I don't want to say he's going to be that, but I think that's just kind of the idea of a move that went under the radar, which could have significant more benefit than was initially realized. So I don't know who else has the burning Jake McCabe thoughts. I've looked at a lot of the fancy stats. A lot of the analytics give him pretty good reviews. He did only play 13 games last season because of an injury.
Yeah.
And he swears that he's going to be back up to 100% this year. So I don't, and if anybody's got Jake McCabe thoughts, have at him.
Underrated good defenseman, but I think LBR, you're writing the McCabe piece, right?
Yep. And he was well liked in Buffalo. I think I've said this before, but in the South, there's not a lot of people who, you know, watch hockey. And in my office, there was only one person, and he was a Buffalo Sabres fan. And when he traded, we have like a Slack of people because he doesn't actually work with us anymore. But it's like a alumni of people lost in our department. And he immediately hit me up and he was like, oh, such a steal. You know, you're going to like him. And he's not a meatball at all. Like as a fan, doesn't like love guys that just hit. But he's like, you'll like him because when he hits, it's meaningful, you know, like he does it often, but it's in a way, it's rarely in a way that's not for purpose. And I was like, oh, that will be so, you know, nice to see for a change.
Hint, hint? Is there a certain player you're referencing in this?
He doesn't exist anymore.
That's right. He's gone.
He's not even in the division anymore. Yeah. He can peace out.
So I'm excited for him. It's interesting because he's a defensive defenseman, but from what I can read from his underlying micro stats, he's got a really good first pass. He helps drive play, even though he doesn't get a lot of points. He hits around the, like, maybe he'll get hit like 20, 25 points, maybe. If he plays a full season, which again is something he hasn't done since, I want to say it was the 16-17 season.
He played 66 games in 1920, which was the pandemic shortened one where
teams
he did 70. So
pretty
good. That was pretty good. Yeah.
But, you know, he's not going to put up a lot of points, but he apparently helps drive offensive play. Like, he's not useless there, which is, I mentioned that Jalmerson's was like that. He was really good at driving play, good passing, you know, that kind of thing to get plays to the other end, even if he didn't ultimately get points out of it. So good defensive and play driving, I'll take it.
Yeah, he's not going to be the guy that leads the rush and makes two or three passes that result in the goal, but it sounds like he's the guy that can at least, like, when the Hawks would hem in their own end for like 45, 60 seconds at a time, he's the guy that will be in the right position to corral the puck, get it to a teammate so they can get the hell out of their own end.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't want to make the comparison because it's not an exact comparison, but a guy like him can sort of do the thing Seabrook used to do where he can rotate over and knock his guy off the puck. He can make that stretch pass, but he's going to succeed a lot more when they put the kibosh to this hybrid system.
I was waiting for the word system to come up at some point. Well, I knew it would.
Well, only because I'm thinking, you know, if he rotates over to the sideboard, you know, to make a hit on his man, who is his man, and the puck gets by him and there's nobody in the slot, it's like, goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
But that's that Keith would use, you know, Seabrook and Keith used to do that all the time. Keith would rotate over, protect the slot, you know, and that's great. But I think he's going to be a very nice upgrade over the.
You shall not be named.
I was going to say like Darko Milicic.
I think this will be a good season to show because, you know, arguably you've got Murphy, who we know is a good defenseman. You've got McCabe, who's a good defenseman. You've got Seth Jones, who you hope will be a good defenseman. There are people who argue he's great. If DeHaan's still here, and then you've got some kids that look solid. This will be a good year to see if, because people are always going, well, Carlson Systems never really had a full, well, this is the year they will, won't they?
Yeah. So,
yeah.
The defensive talent here does not look that bad. Like there's some players here, like you're saying.
And I've, you know, we've always been arguing that players that were good defensively somewhere else that now look kind of like iffy, like DeHaan, sometimes you're like, what are you doing? And it's like, no, it's the system. Or even Taves before that, you're like, or Saad, you know, we all knew that they were good. And then stuff would happen and you're like, but why? Because the system. So this will be the proof. There's no personnel excuses here now.
Well, I don't blame the system for Keith. I blame that. I think he hates Jeremy Collison.
Yeah.
I legitimately think so.
That's why I didn't mention Keith. Cause we know what's up.
The problem with the defensive system may now be that there's no room for kids because the bottom pairing might be Caleb Jones, Riley Stillman. And it seems like to me, like a very real possibility that that's the third pairing to start.
I mean, to be fair, both of them are still.
Yes, but Ian Mitchell and Nicholas Beaudin have higher ceilings than inarguably either of the two.
Yeah, but I would argue that last year they did. Mitchell definitely hit a wall. And some of that I think is because he couldn't adapt to this. Okay, we're going to stop saying the word system.
There needs to be a meme for Colleton where it's like, is great with young guys, does not dress young guys.
It's like the Q narrative, except true.
Actually true.
everything they thought about Q.
They need to have like they need to bring back the real world, but make it like Colleton and Quenville and Stan Bowman, and like all of them have to live together in like a room.
And we lock that room, and we lock that room from the outside, and
yeah,
we don't have to worry about Stan Bowman ever again.
And then just leave.
Yes.
Join Dark Order.
No, I said it was going to start getting sideways, and here we are. But yeah, like I every time I look at the blue line, like I may not see like a clear cut number one, but like I think you can get three decent pairings out of that group, like just on paper at least. And I feel like you're going to see a lot of Jake McCabe and Connor Murphy in the last minute of a game. That'll be your like shutdown last minute pairing. But
God willing.
Yeah. Better, I mean, they'll have to have a lead to have to shut it down. But
remember the Zadorov Murphy shutdown pairing?
No, you see, you said the word, Mill.
I don't care. To hell.
Yes, but now he knows your location.
Yeah, if you say it two more times, he'll appear behind you.
Dude, I have
man
I have
bun all.
I have Horcruxes for this to protect me from being killed by a large Russian defenseman.
All right. Well, trying to think if there's anything else. Oh, I guess the other guy we could talk on who's about the farthest you can get away from the large Russian defenseman is Tyler Johnson, who's a small American forward.
Very small.
He's American, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I think so.
Yeah.
Undrafted, great in college.
Yeah, he's from Spokane, Washington. So there you go.
I think Betsy and I both talked about how he was probably on pace to be a better like scoring threat if he didn't break his wrist.
Yeah.
But he's still good. Like, he's
and Betsy, that's exactly line. What I wanted Betsy to elaborate on, because it seemed like that was kind of the turning point of his career, unfortunately.
So he technically had a couple more seasons of good offense after that, like high offense, but you could tell watching him that he wasn't scoring in the same way or passing the same way. And with natural age decline, cause you know, he's getting up there too. They just all started hitting him in the like last couple of years, like last season and the season before that. And it's not that he's not still productive, cause he's still putting up, you know, he could put up a solid 40, 45 points given the right line mates and situation, I'm sure. Just from hard work. He's like a really hard worker. You know, he's like, he always is going to hustle. And he still has
high energy guy.
Yeah. And he still has the offensive instinct so he could get to where he needs to be for tap ins and stuff like that. He's just not doing as many fancy backhands or, he used to do a really, really nice backhand pass, saucer pass that was, you know, it's not something you usually see from an undrafted kid. But after his wrist, it just, he couldn't do it anymore, really. What you see on the ice just doesn't match with his contract. That's the only problem with him.
Who does?
Yeah.
Right? No, McKinnon's? You're right. I mean, you're right. Well, no, I mean on the Hawks.
Oh, no. Okay.
No, you're totally right. Like, he's a
Murphy's.
But I guess, like, that's fair. But I guess, I would just add, like, a lot of people in the comments were trying to compare him who hadn't watched him to, like, Kruger or Camps, and it's like, he is not that type of center.
Okay, I will take the blame for this. I think this was my fault, because when they first got him, I said the Lightning used him like Kruger in a comment, because he was the 4C during the
Olympics. Yeah, yeah, sure.
And
sure.
Everybody ran with it, like, oh, he's Kruger, and I was like, no, I meant they used him as a shutdown center because they had the luxury.
The NHL All-Star team.
They had enough talent on the three lines above him that they could put him on the fourth line.
Yeah,
the Hawks don't have that.
Yeah, that's like when we were putting Marian Hossa on the third line, you know? Like,
he's kind of a Land of Misfit Toys guy, where he can pretty much play on any line depending on the situation and team. But I kind of want to see him play with Strome if Strome's going to play on the wing.
If Strome's going to play in Chicago.
Bowman came out and said the other day they're not making any more moves. They're good on the cap.
How? I don't know. But I hope they keep Strome. I actually hope they keep DeHaan, too, because I think that top four would be pretty nice.
I mean,
Go ahead, Shepard, quickly.
You don't want to know why they're good on the cap, because it's a certain number 19.
Oh, I don't think that's... I'll worry about that in late September.
We'll see, but I just mean, like, assuming Strome plays, that's who I'd like to see him play with Strome on the wing. Because I'm just assuming Strome's going to stay and be on the wing because they just gave up on him at center. They're like, fuck this. I was like, okay.
I don't want to make it sound like I'm advocating trading Strome. It's just it seemed like he was going to be expendable just the way the Hawks have kind of handled him in the last year or two.
Well, yeah, and every single person I wrote a recap on for the season got traded besides him.
All right, well.
That was like the first one I wrote. No, first forward. So it's just like, what the hell, man?
Yeah, remind me that next April if we get to that point.
Yeah.
All right, well, there's one other guy that the Blackhawks acquired who's been kind of talked about a little bit. We might touch on him a little bit more and a few other things, but we're going to do that on the other side of this timeout, so come on back for that.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
Welcome back to Musings on Madison. And as promised before the break, we want to talk about one more guy that the Blackhawks acquired that I'm sure everyone's already sick of hearing about him. And you guys all know it's Jujhar Khyra, right? that's who we meant? No?
Yeah. Totally who we meant.
It's pronounced Khyra, not Khyra, correct? I didn't say that right?
We are going to learn.
I mean, every time I watch the broadcast for the Oilers, they say Khyra.
Okay. Well, hopefully they're correct. I'm going to look up the pronunciation guide. And Shepard had some – we were talking about him off-air briefly where I said maybe he's just like another Brandon Bullock. But apparently that's significantly insulting to him. So, Shepard, tell the people why I'm wrong.
Well, yeah, he's somebody who's actually able to play with some talent. Unlike Brendan Bullock, he played with Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and did so well. Like, he moves the puck well. They've used a phrase, Meatball City. He's a little bit like he likes to go for hits. They're mostly more effective than hits we were used to last season. Think of him like a taller Shaw, maybe. But he's got some skill to his game. He's got some tenacity.
Can he skate? That's my question with big guys these is they have to be able to skate. And also, according to the Blackhawks website, it is Khyra, not Khyra. So it's Khyra.
He can move, too, a little bit for a big guy.
Yeah, he can move. Yeah, so think of him like Shaw. He can play up and down the lineup. Although you would prefer him to be deeper in the lineup. But if he's a guy who plays every game, you don't mind that.
Yeah, I was going to say, from the micro tracking stats, some people had asked me, well, how does he compare to Kampf? And I was like, well, his transition stats, his actual like carry in and his attempts at it aren't as high or as successful, but he's way better at fetching the puck. So he's better at dump and chase, which is a viable way to gain possession if you're really good at it. So if he's really good at it and his line mates are, then that's the Blackhawks haven't been traditionally great at that. So that's not Shaw was. So that comparison continues to be apt.
It does seem like the Hawks have a lot of guys who are fourth liners. Maybe some of these guys end up in Rockford, obviously. Like I assume Mike Hardman's going to be in Rockford. I guess Mackenzie Entwistle is going to be heading to Rockford this season. But I mean, Carpenter's a fourth liner. Kara's a fourth liner.
Who was the first person?
Hardman.
No, like of those, he's going to be in Rockford, and then
Entwistle will be in Rockford. We said Ryan Carpenter's a fourth liner. Brett Connolly's probably a fourth liner.
Connolly's probably not a third liner. Connolly shouldn't play. I don't want him to play because he should go away.
I want Connolly to play on the third line. Put him with Strome and Tyler Johnson. They're going to score a bunch of bum goals. I'm telling you.
And then where are you putting Lucas Reichel? assuming he's here.
He's not ready. He's 12.
He's 12. Okay. That's fair.
There's a coach that can give him adult supervision, we'll bring him up.
Yeah, next season when the coach is Rocky Thompson, will be good.
You mean like 10 games into the season when it's somebody else?
I hope.
I don't know if I want Mark Crawford working with rookies.
Colleton's not going to get 86th unless they go on some kind of like 1-9-1 skid.
Well,
they're not that bad now. That's the problem. The roster's going to outplay them for like mediocrity. That was
I mean, yeah, there were literally people that were like, should Colleton get the Jack Adams last year when Lincoln and
Wimpen? Oh, I do remember.
He got votes.
I know.
Yeah, Jack Adams votes.
And everybody was like, no.
Stop. The Jack Ass Award is what he should have got.
I will say, like, if we get to like Thanksgiving and the Hawks are like 10-5-3. But we like look at the numbers and it's because Fleury's thrown out a 950 and they're getting destroyed in every possession metric, but the power play goes off for a month. It's like it'll be the exact same story as last season and the season before that. And then it'll all go to shit by Valentine's Day and we'll be back in the same place we were.
Q got
all my optimism just went right out the damn window because that seems so. That seems like it's going to happen. Like it seems too real because it's happened the last two or three seasons already.
I would be interesting to see if even if it's just a mediocre start, if it's just because Q got let go after 15 games going 6-6-3, you know,
that was the John McDonough didn't want to get fired.
Well,
maybe Bowman doesn't want to be fired because he's going on a few seasons now.
I mean,
I'm convinced Bowman can't get fired.
I think eventually.
He's got Horcrux. He's got more Horcruxes than me.
I mean, they fired Dennis Savard after a game he won. So
yeah, but Dennis Savard was like a placeholder until they got good anyways.
Well,
yeah. But it's different.
The problem is I don't know if they're good yet.
That's true. We don't know if they're good.
We'll never.
Speaking of guys that we don't know how good they are, Seth Jones. That's the player I actually wanted to touch on because we did talk about him a lot last week, and he has been talked about a lot in the last couple of weeks. And I'm not completely exhausted of that whole narrative, but I'm approaching it. But I just wanted to make sure if there's any other Seth Jones thoughts that Mill, Betsy, or Shepard, if any of you had and wanted to share with the class. Just want to make sure we haven't missed anything. So any other burning Seth Jones opinions?
I've said my piece.
He's a number three defenseman. That's getting paid like a number one. And I am growing. I made up my mind. The last time I said I couldn't make up my mind whether the trade was worse or the contract was worse. I think enough people that are smart and I trust have said that he would have gotten that contract from somewhere that it's fine. If they like arguably the Blackhawks would have just have signed him to that same deal, just 7 years instead this offseason when he's a free agent.
Yeah. Well,
fine. Yeah. Fine. But here's the bad thing. Again, looking at the photos from Alex DeBrincat's wedding over the last weekend, Adam Boqvist was a key part of that. That's a really bad trade. Why did you do that? Why did you give up?
He got invited to that way before he got traded.
Yes. But it's also, he seems like a key piece of like the locker room.
I mean, and,
like,
I think Boqvist
was actually in the party. Like he was one of the groomsmen.
Yeah. Like Adam Boqvist was like a good person to be around, arguably, and like I still don't get. Again, I still think he's a better defenseman than Seth Jones, and he's not that. The Blackhawks would never have had to pay him.
I'm not going to grant you that Boqvist is better than Seth Jones right now.
Boqvist has been better both of the seasons he's been in the NHL.
By analytics, situationally, but what?
Yes, and that's what matters. Analytics matters. Okay, the best team in the league, analytically, the last few seasons has been the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Okay, but do his numbers matter that much when the team didn't do shit? Like comparing them, both of them played on garbage teams.
Yeah, I would say that Columbus is a little bit better. Was a little bit better than Chicago, which means that Boqvist put up better numbers on a worse team.
I got a good look at Columbus last season. They sucked pretty hard too.
And what about the ice time?
Yeah, I was about to say. I think technically Boqvist was like he got mostly offensive zone starts. He didn't have nearly as much like faces higher quality of competition, that tends to even
out. And you're going to say that Seth Jones, who played with inarguably his team's best defenseman in Zach Werenski, versus playing with Duncan Keith. I'm sorry, 37-year-old Duncan Keith. There's a huge difference between Zach Werenski and Duncan Keith.
We all agree with that. We're just saying that we have to kind of, like, you know, I can't make up my mind
until I watch him.
I think Boqvist is going to be better. Like, they're going on different trajectories. But, I mean, at this point, Seth Jones is here. We just got to, like, accept it and hope he does well. You kind of just have to hope.
Yeah.
And, like, there's not a lot you can do.
If he proves to be a worthy of a number three defenseman role, that's good. Like,
Then we're back where we started with Brent Seabrook.
Seabrook
wasn't a number. Like, Seabrook was barely a six. If Seth Jones plays like worthy of second pairing, like a second pairing role, I can live with it. I won't like it because he's getting paid like a number one guy. But I mean, it's better than contributions you would have gotten from us. And I think that's where I've come around. I still don't like the trade, but I think I said this last week, like, I softened on how much I disliked it because, like, Seth Jones at minimum is a worthwhile, competent NHL defenseman. He may not be Duncan Keith in his prime. He may not be Zach Werenski, but he's still going to be at minimum decent.
Yeah.
And they didn't have enough decent defensemen last season.
So their argument's sake, he might not be actually decent. Okay. That's Shepard's point. I think that's a valid possibility. He might not be decent. There were times in Columbus, there's a reason his numbers are so bad, that he was not decent. All the rest of the top four guys were still putting up good numbers. And when you watch, you could see why some of his numbers were like trash. I think he's better than his analytics have shown the last two seasons. I just don't know if he's anywhere near what he was before. I will still hate the trade, even if he is a competent number three, not because of the cap hit, because I try really hard not to pay attention to cap hits. It'll be because of what they gave up, because they could have had a Boqvist, they could have had Sillinger, and then they could have had whoever they're going to get next year, because I think the Blackhawks will be just good enough not to get a lottery pick or something like that, but not good enough to go very far. But at this point, we have to try real hard just to separate.
Yeah.
Hope he does well.
Maybe as clean of a slate as possible.
Yeah. Maybe he clicks really well with McCabe or something like that. And they're just rock stars together. You have to hope that he can at least be a two, because I don't think any of the players on the team right now are a true number one. I don't think there's that many teams that do have a true number one. And you just have to hope that they can do it by committee.
Yeah, there's only so many Victor Hedmans in the NHL.
I understand Shepard's frustration because, man, those numbers, he did look bad and his numbers are trash.
Yeah. I would not have been as opposed to this trade if it was for an actual number one. It was just, it's not, and it's never going, I don't think he's ever going to be back to a number one.
I've already accepted the fact that his contract is going to be killer, but it's only going to get worse as the years go on. And it's the Brent Seabrook conversation all over again,
but it's the next GM's problem.
The hope is that he's 26 years old and that for the next 3 to 4 years,
he gets something close, 27.
I'm looking at the Jay Fresh hockey player card.
I mean, he's literally going to be 27 in like a month. That's okay.
So either
way. People kept going, oh, he's only 26. And I was like, I mean, by like.
Now we're getting into semantics.
No, it's just that when you're talking about contract year, when something's coming up, because he's not going to be a 26-year-old defenseman when he plays for the Blackhawks.
Right. But yeah, just the point is, like, if you can get like at least get like 3 or 4 years of pretty good hockey out of him, or like average to above average, maybe even good hockey out of him. And then he'll get some mysterious illness, they'll LTIR him, and then it'll be gone. Cause that's how this works.
Yeah. Except he's not going to do that at 31.
Which is the problem. Shepard, ye of little faith. I'm sure the Blackhawks can find, there's no team that knows how to circumvent this salary cap better than the Chicago Blackhawks.
I'd argue a few teams.
Tampa Bay,
Toronto, Vegas is starting to get there a little bit.
All right. The Hawks invented cap circumvention. Can I work on that one? Using LTIR?
They were the first ones to do it successfully to win a cup.
All right, there we go.
Tampa was like, we're going to cheat off you, but then just do even better.
Yeah. And then my favorite part was that these cap circumvention champions teamed up for the Tyler Johnson trade in the offseason. I thought that was very fitting. For a cap circumvention trade.
Well, the one thing Brent Seabrook, Tampa Bay Lightning legend.
The one thing we can say about Jones before I just want to get this out is it is a lot more pressure to play in Chicago, especially for that contract. So if he does really suck as bad as we're saying he might suck, he's going to get booed out of the building.
Well, actually, Mel, I don't know why I said that so loudly, but I'm intrigued to see what happens. Well, first off, hopefully, like, there is going to be full attendance at the start of the season. It's not right now, as we're talking in the first week of August, it's not looking so great about that for indoor sports, at least. But anyway, I know a couple of people that were on the season ticket waiting list for the Blackhawks.
Who declined them?
No, but they're getting calls and texts from the Blackhawks ticket people saying, do you want season tickets? And they said that's the first time that's happened since they've been on that list, which was like allegedly like a couple years deep. That's how long the line was. You're going to have to wait a few years. And now all of a sudden they're calling people. Like, yeah, it was more than it's been more than one incident. So I'm starting to think like they've been not good for 4 or 5 seasons now. I'm sure the first week or two, like the buzz of being able to go to a Hawks game will be back. But then after that, like once we get into like, you know, them Tuesday night games in November, like I wonder how many people are going to be at those games.
Mine came up last year and that was the first time they called me since, God, I don't know. It's like 10 years. And, I even got to pick my seats and then I told them, I'm not giving you that money this year. I'm not paying for it because there's no fans.
Right.
Because it's very expensive. Two seats and $329 were like $5,600. And, and then they called me this year and I'm like, I'm not giving you a dime until you clear this front office stuff up.
It's great.
I mean, seriously, they called me. My phone said Blackhawks. Oh. And then they emailed me when I didn't pick up.
Well, did you think they were calling you for a player tryout?
I mean, if you think Seth Jones' analytics are bad, you don't want to see mine.
Yeah, but can you skate, Mel? That's all that matters. Can you skate?
Better than Nikita Zadorov, maybe? No, I'm just kidding. Honestly, not anymore. I don't go regularly.
Okay, well.
I'm too fat these days, Dave.
It happens to the best of us. So I guess that's all the Blackhawks talk. I guess the only other thing that's come out in the last week is that they announced there was an internal memo that wasn't that internal because everybody in the media got it, that the Blackhawks are committed to releasing the findings from their internal investigation to the public. I guess we'll see if they stick to that pledge when the investigation's done. I have not seen any sort of indication about a timeline for that. I feel like they're going to try and wrap it up before the season starts, but who knows? So I guess just stay tuned on that front. And any other burning thoughts on that one? I got nothing.
Hopefully they do what they're supposed to do.
Hi, everybody from 2010.
I'm one of those people that likes to say, hey, you need to get all the facts out there. And I hope we get at least enough so we can like try to judge. It's still really hard to take an investigation that's paid for by the Blackhawks,
yes,
like at face value. And for a while there, they weren't even committing to it going public. And then the wording of the internal memo didn't say all of it would be public or, you know, as much as they actually can, because some of it's going to have to be sensitive and censored and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. They kind of made it so that the like end result would be. So what's going public might not actually be what we're thinking about. So I think a lot of like opinions will need to be gauged on that. And it'll be interesting to see what happens, but people get real like irritable about anybody making up their mind, yay or nay so far. And I'm like, if people want to make up their mind already, let them. If people want to wait, let them. If people want to try to be neutral, let them. Just like, stop getting so hot about other people's opinions about it.
I think my just overall feeling is with this whole situation is that however it ends up, you're just going to feel unsatisfied. Empties the what'd you say, Mel Shepard?
Unsatisfied.
Yeah, I think unsatisfied is a good word for it. Just like whatever, it's just going to be, you're going to be left expecting more from that. That's just the feeling, because that's how it always seems to happen with professional sports and things.
Yeah,
especially hockey. It's just
we're all cynical here. I'm not thinking it's going to be. From the start, I was like, I don't think anything's going to come of this where they're going to fire people.
But we'll see where it goes, and stay tuned on that, because I'm sure there's more to come. I'm sure Rick Westhead will have another report within 2 or 3 days. He's been a little quiet, so I'm sure something's about to come out.
He's probably waiting for something like the Blackhawks to announce something, so he can then be like, boom, because that's what happened last time. He waited for all the like free agency stuff kind of to die down, and then him go, ha-ha, here's the next part.
I do not have I have not listened to the podcast before, but apparently Rick Westhead was on the Steve Dangle podcast today, which today being Wednesday night. So I think I might have to check out that episode, because apparently they talk a lot about the Blackhawks things. So if after you finish listening to this podcast, of course, check out that one as well. So we got all cynical and weird and talking about serious topics. So let's make an awkward transition to the usual silliness that entails the end of our episodes with a food take. Mill, it's your turn. I know you said that you were a little unsure if you had one. Have you come to an opinion to share with the class?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not?
No, I ran out of food takes, and I'm trying to think of one, but the problem is I don't think I have anything that's a hot take, and I hate to do that to you guys because I can talk about literally anything else.
Okay. I told you I had a backup plan, and I don't know if this probably will not qualify as a hot take, but I would like to get this out into the public, because it's been on my mind recently that I think Greek food is wildly underrated.
Oh yeah.
I feel like in the Chicagoland area, like it feels like there's Mexican food on every corner, probably because there's a lot of people from Mexico in this area. So that gets a lot of play, and it's very good. And I don't want to besmirch that, because it's all wonderful. But every time I have Greek food, I think, why don't I have this more often? So
yeah,
that's my deep burning hot take. Eat more Greek food.
There's a lot of Greek restaurants in the region too.
There are. And I'm beginning to explore, which is the reason why this take came out.
I think when you're in the right mood. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like that much.
Yeah, I think it's definitely like, it's not a main staple of a lot of diets, but like
there's it's a the lot Mediterranean of diet.
Yeah, it probably should be. That's my diet, honestly. So it fits in for me. But like if you follow it strictly, it's pretty healthy.
Like I feel like a lot of Greek dishes are like there's a lot of like freshly cooked meats and greens and stuff in there. Yes. So it's not like. And I feel like there's like the thing with Italian food, I feel like whenever you eat Italian food is you have to eat all of it. And I feel like with Greek food, it just seems to be a healthier portion for some reason.
Well, they do like family style a lot too. So you can just kind of take as much as you want, but you don't have to get like the biggest plate ever.
Yeah. Yes, you do, Mel. If you're at an Italian restaurant, you do.
Well, no, I'm talking about at a Greek restaurant.
Okay.
Like,
I got you.
They usually bring it out like family style. Sometimes you can order it that way. So like if you're having the same thing with somebody else, and then if you fill your plate and you eat it, and you want more, you just take more, but you don't have to get stuck with like a ton if you don't want to. I don't know if that makes sense, but it's portion control, baby.
Yeah, it's overrated.
Maybe it's because I don't know that many great Greek restaurants in like the Atlanta area. And that's
just about to ask how the Greek food is down there.
And then I'm like sitting there thinking like when I travel in the US, Greek's not one of the places that I go to normally. I've been to Greece and the food there was delicious. And I loved it the entire time. But nothing I've ever had in the US has compared to that versus say like I've been to Italy too. And while food there obviously was phenomenal, I have had Italian food that's just as good in the U.S. Same thing with like French and some other places. But I know my favorite food that I've had that was in Greece that I kept, I loved was their stuffed grape leaves. It had like lamb and rice in it. It was like an appetizer, I want to say, but I kept ordering.
That we make stuff like that. Serbs do too. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's so good. And I just was like, I would never have thought to be like, yeah, wrap my shit in a leaf and give it to me. like a random leaf, like a grape.
So the main thing I'm getting out of this conversation is I need about 4 or 5 days in Santorini to really take in the cuisine.
Or I need to eat more Greek food and like find better places that have Greek food, because
Greek Town Chicago when you come is awesome.
I mean, yeah, there's
all kind of places.
There's a fair amount of Greek presence in the Chicagoland area that there's. I can't call it. I couldn't say authentic because I wouldn't know the difference, but. I mean, it seems pretty good. I enjoy the hell out of it. There was a Greek fest a couple weeks ago and I didn't go, and I immediately regret that I did not go.
Maybe it's because I don't like there's a lot of yogurt in Greek food and I'm not really big on yogurt based things. Sure. That seems to be a staple in a lot of, they're always like, let me throw some white stuff on that. And I'm like,
I mean,
this is tzatziki sauce,
which is fine. It's just not my favorite.
You can order so much. Greek Islands is the place I recommend in Chicago. It's like, it's the bomb.com. I'm bringing that back.
Okay, no.
That's going to be my new second city.
We opened with talking about Woodstock 99, and now you're bringing back phrases from 1999.
I mean, what's up?
Oh, all right. Well.
Sorry, Office just popped into my head.
I think that's a perfect place to dismount, get off this beam, and then end this episode. Any final thoughts from the panel from this here episode?
Go get some Greek food.
Yeah, go get some Greek food. There we go. But thank you very much for listening to this episode. I was actually just, before we did this, I was looking at like some of the numbers. We've had some of our highest listened episodes. So I'm not sure. To everyone that's been listening. I don't know why you listen to this podcast, but I'm glad you do. I hope it's entertaining. I hope this one is entertaining as well. We're probably not going to do too many of these episodes in the future. In fact, I wouldn't expect one. The Musings on Madison anytime soon, unless something crazy happens with the Hawks, which kind of hoping it doesn't, kind of hoping things go quiet for a while. That'd be nice. There might be some deep dish episodes. Looking into reviving the Friday shows where we interview random people. I've got a few people in mind to talk to, so might have some of those podcast episodes coming your way. We'll have some content at the website. Probably about time for a top 25 under 25 refresher, since we haven't done that since the last season started. But other than that, like I said, this is hockey doldrum season, so maybe we'll just start getting weird and writing about Greek food or the weather in Georgia, or I don't know, just any other weird stuff we can come up with to keep everyone entertained for the next month.
Spoiler, it's so gross here.
Joining Dark Order.
I bet.
Joining the Dark Order.
That's going to be the deep dish next week. Me and Shepard are
going to talk about the Shepard and Milk can have their wrestling corner, you know, what have you. So, like I said, there's not going to be a lot of hockey talk, but we'll still try and do some things, and maybe we'll do a mailbag episode. I don't know. We've got some thoughts. We've got some ideas. If you have some ideas, you can tweet us to the Second City Hockey account. That's 2ND City Hockey. You can tweet me, SCH_DaveM. Shepard is at Shepard Price. Mill is at Mill182. The website is secondcityhockey.com. Also, you could email us secondcityhockey@gmail.com. That's all spelled out. But yeah, I think that's going to do it for this episode of Musings on Madison. Thanks to Betsy, Mill, and Shepard for hanging out. Thanks again to you for listening. And we'll talk to you sometime soon. As always, go Hawks.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you,
Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.